really in depth. I will come up hopefully tomorrow or the day after. And then also work in a linear combination of these people, partly in this paper and partly a work in progress. So this is a talk on the stream phenomenology. For there are several questions we usually attack in the stream phenomenology. One is to try to construct the explicit models realistic with your families and so on, to look for four-dimensional effective actions, and then also model-independent issues like global symmetries, so breaking model stabilization, and cosmology. And I will concentrate today on these two issues. So the title is large volume, and large volume with capital letters means that it's huge. And why is it that we want the large volume? We want large volume, first of all, because in that sense, for practical matters, the effective field theory is under control. You trust, it's more robust to whatever you extract from the effective field theory, you can trust, and you can integrate out the stringy modes in a good way. Then, but also for phenomenological reasons, we know that the relationship between the Planck scale and the string scale is related by the volume. And so for volumes large, say 10 to the 4 in string units, we'll get the string scale to be the God scale, which is many people's favorite. Also, for a volume 10 to the 30, we get the TV scale, which is some other people's favorite. And then for the intermediate case, we can have, say, volume 10 to the 15 and get an intermediate scale, which is also interesting for several reasons. So having large volume is desirable in string theory, and people had proposed that for several years. But the question is not to put the large volume by hand, but to actually to determine, to find it as a dynamically from a string theory. So then we have to address the issue of model stabilization. We have to find the size and the shape of the corresponding compact manifold. So then this is the exponentially large volume in type 2b using the standard approaches of fluxes and non-perturbative effects. For type 2a, there is a recent paper of Paldi et al. That found the dual, say, of our scenario. So let me just quickly remind you how we got to this large volume scenario. And just go through a couple of transparencies. In an effective supersymmetric field theory, we can start with the carrier potential and superpotential. And typically, you can expand the three-level piece, perturbative expansion, plus non-perturbative corrections. I call all them J. And the superpotential is just a three-level piece plus a non-perturbative piece that I call omega. So it has no perturbative corrections as the standard in supersymmetric theories. Using K and W, you can compute the scalar potential, and it has a three-level piece, a V, I call VJ piece, the loop corrections part depending on the perturbative corrections to K, and then something depending on the non-perturbative corrections and plus combined things. And usually what we do is to extract information out of the three-level piece, and all the other ones will be just small modifications of what we find, so to find minimum of potential and so on. however, in the flux compactifications, the V0 piece is zero. So that means that there is a property called the no-scale property that the carrier potential satisfies, and so this is zero. So then this is the leading order, and that's important to have control on the perturbative corrections. Notice that this is usually bigger than that, because perturbative corrections are always bigger than non-perturbative corrections for weak coupling. And however, writing this, I can write Vj is j dot times W0 squared, and V omega is omega squared plus dot, dot, dot. So it may happen that this is bigger than that, if you tune W0 to be very, 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 very small. That is very unnatural, but it's possible, and that's what KKLT did in the original scenario. So if you don't do that, then you cannot neglect this, and this term will be the most important one, and that is what I'm going to concentrate on today. So I convince you that, hopefully to have convinced you that it's important to have the perturbative corrections of the Keller potential under control, because those are the ones that are going to be the leading order corrections for the scalar potential. So fortunately, for have a yellow manifold for quantifications. The Becker, Becker, Hack, and Lewis computed the leading order corrections, alpha prime corrections to the Keller potential, which take this form. This is a constant proportional to the Euler number of the manifold divided by the string coupling. And the Keller potential is usually minus 2 log of the volume. This is the tree-level piece. And this is the correction, the alpha prime correction. I'm writing this for a particular Calabi-Yau, which is 11169. You don't have to understand what this means. It's just a particular Calabi-Yau. And this Calabi-Yau has two moduli, tau B and tau S, B for big and S for small, because they will be big and small when I stabilize them. Notice that there is a difference, a minus sign here, which is crucial. And the superpotential, I write it like the tree-level piece coming from fluxes, as in the standard KKFP scenario, plus a number two value effect exponential in Ts, which is T is the complex field for which the real part is tau S. And I could have added a number two value piece on tau B, but that will turn out to be irrelevant, so I will, for simplicity, I won't write it. So once you do that, the scalar potential is a sum of these four terms. This first term is positive definite and depends on the dilaton and the complex structure moduli. And it can be is minimized when it is zero. It's essentially zero, because this is positive definite and this is leading order in the volume. So this is what it fixes S and U. And that's the standard way of that, for instance, Giddings, Kaj, and Polsinski did the fixing in with fluxes. Then the interesting thing for us is those three terms. I have exchanged the tau B by volume. So here you have a function of e to the minus tau S divided by the volume. This is volume squared, but only one power here, and this is volume cube. This is the piece coming from this term and has no exponential. So the only observation I have to make is that you compare these three terms. If the volume is the e to the A tau S, then this term goes like 1 over volume cube. This term goes like 1 over volume cube, and this also. So then the three of them can combine with each other to give you a minimum. And that's precisely what it happens. And so the minimum of that potential for the two variables, volume and tau s, is volume equals to the exponential of tau s. And tau s is fixed by this parameter psi that I mentioned, divided by the string scale. So for the string coupling. So for the string coupling, say, of order 0.1, tau is of order 10, and then the volume is exponentially large. So that's the whole point about getting exponentially large. So it's crucial to have the alpha prime corrections, because this is the coefficient that comes there. And it's crucial to have the non-perturbative corrections. But notice that the non-perturbative expansion is non-perturbative in tau s, whereas the perturbative expansion is an expansion in 1 over the volume. So we are comparing two different expansions, not two terms in the same expansion. OK, so then for that, then you can play with the coefficients, this AS, and then you can get if AS depends on the number of seven brains and so on. So then for small variations of these numbers, you get huge variations on the volumes, which is the standard power of the exponential. So then you can get the God scale as easy as to get the TEV scale for the string theory, for string scale. So this is very interesting, because then we can have actually the large volume scenario realized into a string theory in a way that you can derive it rather than assume it as it was done 10 years ago. I have to say that for that, we didn't fine-tune the W0, it's of order 1 or 10, so that's why the alpha prime corrections were dominant. And this scenario, which is very interesting, just getting the string scale to be TEV, unfortunately doesn't work, because then the volume modulus is extremely light, and then you get problems with the force. So, but the other two scenarios from intermediate scale up is okay. So the picture we have in mind is similar to what Kumru was mentioning this morning, is that you have the standard model in a small cycle of the Calabi-Yau. So you have, say, these seven brains wrapping a small cycle. Like here is a cartoon, and then just saying it's intersecting brains or so, with the quarks and leptons coming up from different intersection points. In this case, will be actually magnetized brains. But then there's a huge volume provided by the exponentially large force cycle, that is what I call tau B. But then you have the others, several others, which will be small. And the standard model has to be wrapping up the small cycle, not the big one, because the gauge coupling is proportional to the size of the cycle. And in the big one, the gauge coupling will be extremely weak and cannot be the standard model gauge coupling. So this fits very well with the picture of Kuhnrum, and essentially complemented, because Kuhnrum was not worried about modal stabilization. He was worried about the local part of how to build the standard model. So given that this works so well in that example, we can ask if how generic this large volume is. And it's quite generic. The only condition you require is that the number of complex structure moduli is bigger than the number of Kähler moduli. And this one has to be greater than one. For one, it doesn't work, because you have to compare two different moduli, so you need at least two. And this condition comes because this parameter xi that I had in my previous transparency had to be positive. And it is the difference of these two objects, because that's the Euler number. So this you need to have that condition. And the other one is that you need at least, in the your Calabi Yau has to have at least one blow-up mode. One cycle can be collapsed to zero size, like the Del Pesos that Kunrum was talking this morning. If you have that cycle, that was playing the role of tau s, the tau s that I was in my first example. And as long as you have one of those, you put the exponential in that field, and then you get the large volume. So on these two conditions, then you get the large volume. However, that's not the full story. There are other moduli which are not blow-up modes or volume. They're like a vibration moduli and so on. And unfortunately, they are not stabilized by this correction. So then you have to do something else. What else you have to do is at this level, this is a number of moduli I call, let me see, L, which is the total number of Kähler moduli minus the number of small ones, minus one, given the volume, say. This is still flat under these approximations. So then you have to consider the next order approximation, because you have now a flat direction, and then that will be lifted by whatever leading order correction is after beyond that. So the leading order correction for that will be a string loop corrections. So we consider alpha prime corrections, and now we have to introduce string loop corrections. Unfortunately, for the string loop corrections to the Kähler potential is much less understood. People have only, this group has computed the corrections to the Kähler potential, so these are two types of corrections, for only toroidal orientifolds. So that's the only thing we know. However, they were able to extract in the second paper how these corrections depend on the volume, which is the important thing for us. And the volume dependence is only comes from a Weyl rescaling from going to the string frame to the Einstein frame. So it's universal. So it applies for all Calabi Yau. So using that information, you can compute these corrections to the scalar potential and get the first one give you an interest in zero. The next ones give you something which is subdominant compared to the alpha prime corrections we have. But for the directions that were left flat before, this will be important to lift them. And that's precisely what it happens. So as an example, I'll take another Calabi Yau. We call this one Swiss cheese, because remember the volume was a difference of two terms. So the term that comes with a negative sign, the bigger it is, the volume gets smaller. So it's like a hole. And so this is a multiple Swiss cheese, because the Kähler potential has two of those models. And so for those, the scalar potential, we put, you have, let me see, this is a particular Calabi Yau. You have three moduli. One is the volume and two of the small ones. For this, what I call tau E3 is where I have the exponential, the non-perturbative effects. And for what I call tau SM is where I have the standard model. So the standard model, you better don't have that cycle with non-perturbative effects, because you have to, you cannot give depth to the standard model field. And that has been pointed out by Blumenhagen et al. So for this cycle size, even though it's a blow-up mode, it cannot be stabilized by just number two and alpha prime corrections, but you need the loop corrections. Once you include the loop corrections, you get a nice minimum. And so and at the value of the same order as the tau E3. So this is where the standard model can be. This region, even though it looks very bad, is because at some point where you don't trust the effective field theory, but in this region you trust it because it's a order 10 or so. Another example where it doesn't work, the large volume doesn't work, is a K3 vibration. K3 vibration, the volume is a combination like this, for two moduli. This is for another Calabi Yau. And once you plug the scalar potential, you don't have a blow-up mode here, so you cannot get a small cycle. So it doesn't, then you don't get a large volume. However, you have a K3 vibration with a blowing up mode like this, then you can stabilize the moduli, But the moduli are stabilized at an interesting case. Now, the vibration moduli, the tau 1 and tau 2, they both get exponentially large. And this one, the tau 3, is the small. I have to recall that whatever, when I call something small, is what everybody else calls large. Okay, so the potential in this case, once you introduce these corrections, you have the volume is this difference of this two moduli. Then there's the other direction, omega, which is the sum, which this was left flat up to the alpha prime corrections. Once you include the loop corrections, then the potential has a nice shape with a minimum here. And notice that omega, this field omega is, because it has a plus sign, is bigger than the volume. And that's interesting because then you can go beyond the range of the volume. So that means that it can be a large field, as in the sense that Eva was talking before. Okay, so. So you can choose the model, fixed such that the volume can take any value, and I will start taking the value such that the string scale is the intermediate scale, and I'll tell you why. Here you have to put the Calabi-Yau, you can put the standard model either on D7 brains wrapping cycles, or say D3 brains in some particular points. It so happens that for D3 brains you don't get something interesting, but for D7 brains, the high energy physics works very nicely, because for that scale, the 10 to 11 GeV, you get a gravitational mass, which is a PEV scale, and then that addresses the hierarchy problem without any fine-tuning in the W0. So since this is a conference about particle strings and cosmology, this is the particles part. So you get a nice setup of soft breaking terms for supersymmetry breaking of Gugino masses and scalar masses and so on. They are universal, addressing the issue of universality that Yanagida mentioned this morning, even if it is a gravity mediation supersymmetry breaking. And all that works very well if the string scale is 10 to 11 GeV. So you get particles to work well. Now let's go to the cosmology and see what happens. In cosmology, just a quick comment is that there's a general issue about cosmology. You get topological defects are play an important role in cosmology, but in string theory, there is a general statement that there are no exact global symmetries. So that means that some of these topological defects that people have proposed, in particular textures, require exact global symmetries, some global symmetries, and you may think that a string theory may rule them out or the other way around. If they find evidence of them, you can say something very strong about the string theory. However, if you have a large volume, you can have the symmetries to be where the standard model is sitting. You can have the approximate symmetries given by the isometries locally. Even though the Calabi-Yau has no isometries, locally you can have isometries, and then they act like global symmetries in your standard model sector. And this global symmetry will be broken by the size of the volume. So if the volume is very large, then you can get approximate global symmetries, and then you can get interesting physics. About inflation, we have candidates for inflatons coming from the blow from the closed string model, in particular blow up modes. Initial about initial conditions, we don't know how things are started, but if one cycle started in a position that is not its minimum, so I picture here kind of elongated, and while the cycle gets stabilized to get its final size, a brain in some part of the Calabi-Yau gets inflated. So that's a way of getting inflation to work, where the inflaton is a blow-up mode. In practice, this works this way. You have a potential of the type I was showing you before with this three terms. This potential, when you canonically normalize the field, and for large tau, this is the direction. This is tau small, this is the volume, this is the potential. So for the volume fixed, the tau small can start large. That's the large cycle that I had before, and getting smaller and smaller up to stabilize. In this regime, the potential looks like a constant that's lifting here, minus an exponential of the corresponding canonical normalized field, tau, tau n. So this is a typical textbook case for inflation. Actually, it's shown in textbook as an example of large field inflation. However, it is not the case here because the quantity in exponential is large, but it's large because the volume is large, not because tau is large. Okay. Still, you get inflation, but it's a standard small field inflation. You don't have the potential is as flat as you want. You don't have eta problem in this sense. And you can compute, for instance, the NS to be, say, between 0.96 and 0.967. So it's a nice model of inflation that so we proposed a couple of years ago, and then Bohm and Kaufman et al. Have been generalizing. However, there are open questions for this scenario. One is the loop effects, the same loop effects that were helping us to stabilize all the other moduli, they can ruin the flatness of this potential, because if this was flat, only considering all alpha prime corrections. So you have to worry about how the loop, the next order correction, which are the loop corrections, the string loop corrections, could affect that flatness, and generically they will do. So you have to do something not to wrap a brain on the corresponding cycle to avoid this loop of effects to be important. But then if you don't wrap brains on that cycle, you have problems about reheating. So it's something that is not under control. An issue of this is being small field inflation, you get R to be much more than one. So there's no observation of tensor perturbations. And there is something that we have been addressing recently is that there is this tension between phenomenology and cosmology. So the particle physics part that I was mentioning before requires to solve the hierarchy problem, the string scale to be 10 to the 11 GeV. However, for cosmology, to get inflation, to get the delta rho over rho on the right size, we require the string scale to be the God scale, which is the standard value. So the model of inflation I show you is was very nice, was giving me the right cosmology, but it wasn't giving me the right phenomenology, and the other way around. So either one or the other. So we address how to address this question. People, well, one possibility would be to look for models of low-scale inflation, and people have explored that in the past. That's what we have been doing with the Conlon, Kalosh, and Lindes, to consider a scenario where the inflaton itself, I'm sorry, the volume itself is the inflaton. And so at small values of the volume, this is the canonical normalized field corresponding to the volume. For small values of the volume, you can have an inflection point inflation. So this can be tuned to give you inflation. The volume is small, relatively small, to give you the God scale. But then the field, instead of reheating, you have a very long runaway towards the proper minimum, which is a very large volume, and that will give you the intermediate scale. So you can have both the God scale for inflation and the intermediate scale for cosmology, for phenomenology. A problem that you may wonder here is that this height is much bigger than this barrier, and then you have to address this famous overshooting problem that Paul Stanhart and Rami Burstein mentioned already 15 years ago or so. So to address the overshooting problem, you have to see to follow the evolution of the field during expansion, and these are different. This is the location of the barrier, and this is different initial conditions for the shooting. And there is Hubble dampen, just a small amount of radiation given by this second model is enough to avoid the overshooting. And that the fields you have trajectories ending up stabilizing at the minimum and never going through the barrier. So that's a non-trivial result. I have to say, well, this is a nice scenario in that regard, but I'm not particularly happy because of the requirement of getting inflation here. You need quite fine tuning. So at least it works as an existing proof or illustration that this scenario can be realized. Okay, but on top of that, we have now new candidates for inflation, for inflatons. Because as I told you, the directions that were flat in the alpha prime correction and they got lifted by loop corrections, like this phi omega that I mentioned before, they happen to be larger than the volume and then lighter than the volume. The volume itself has a mass given essentially is proportional to the Hubble constant. So then eta, which is essentially the mass over the Hubble parameter, is was of order one. So that's why you need a lot of fine tuning for the volume. But these other fields, the field that I call omega, when you canonically normalize, I have now this field phi, it takes the potential like this. The mass is lighter, so then the mass is lighter by some fraction of the volume. So the larger the volume, the smaller the mass. So eta gets smaller. That's the intuitive thing. When you compute the potential at relatively large phi, you get a potential, again, of the same type that I had before, but I have no volume factor here. So it's only phi. And phi itself can take values greater than M Planck. Not too much, like it's a order 5 or 8 bigger than M Planck, because that you cannot get, this omega field cannot be as large as you want, because you hit the boundary of the Keller cone, that will some cycle will collapse to zero. But it can be large enough such that you have large field inflation. This is a nice flat potential. You can have large field inflation, and you can compute the ratio of tensor to scalars, and they come out to be 0.01, which is not that bad, compared to 10 to the minus 12 that we had in the previous model. So that's something interesting. This is work in progress with Michele Ceccoli. Other cosmological implications. One issue, which I think is very generic in string theory, and Yanagida mentioned it this morning, is what in supergravity was known as the Polanyi problem, and here is in string theory it's got the name cosmological moduli problem, because the moduli fields in string theory tend to have the same physics as the Polanyi field that Yanagida was mentioning this morning. And so you have to address that issue. Generically, the problem is that you have these fields. People saw the moduli, they couple with gravitational strength interactions, and they couple gravitational strength interactions, and they have a potential, and they can be light, and they have enough mass proportional to the gravitational mass, and in that sense they are subject to this problem, because after inflation they are outside the minimum of the potential, so the incoherent oscillations will over close the universe. Or if they decay late in the history of the universe and ruin nucleosynthesis. So that's a generic thing. In this case, it so happens that we have a bunch of moduli, the complex structure moduli, the dilaton, they tend to be very much trapped in the minimum, because the minimum, the potential for them goes like 1/volume² compared to 1/volume³ for the other ones. So these fields are not dangerous. All of the small, that I call this tau, all of the blow up modes, they happen to not couple with the strings in strength, but they couple they don't couple with the Planck's strength interaction, but with the string strength interaction. So they decay extremely fast. If the string scale is lighter, then they decay extremely fast in the history of the universe, and they have no problem with the cosmological moduli problem. And they don't even produce overproduction of gravitino. So we are safe from most of the moduli, except for the volume. The volume itself, it does couple with gravitational strength interaction, and the mass in the intermediate scale scenario is of order MeV, so it's subject to the cosmological moduli problem. So you have to come up with a solution of this problem. So I emphasize that this is a generic problem in string theory, and it has been around for many years, and it requires, I would say, serious attention. So there are several possibilities to solve it, like a period of late inflation and so on. But I have to address that it's an issue here. So, but let's assume that this problem has been solved, that there's something diluted this field, and then the field is still here at a late time. So you can compute how this field decays, since it is of order MeV, then it can decay into gamma, gamma, and E plus E minus. That's the only channels they have available. And you can compute exactly the rate of decay to this fields, and then the decay to E plus E minus can be an explanation for the 511 keV line that people have been observing in the center of a galaxy. I have to say that several people here are working on this from other perspectives. So this is our scenario, and it comes out the mass of this field to be of the MeV side is fixed already by the scale of supersymmetry breaking, so we couldn't play with it. And the couplings to E plus E minus and gamma gamma are such that it couples stronger to the E plus E minus than to gamma gamma. So then it prefers the E plus E minus when E plus annihilates with E minus later on it produces the 511, and that's the line dominant over the straight decay into gamma gammas. However, well, we know that this SPI spectrometer in Integral has been seen it, and that's the something interesting for this, because we can, as I told you, that you have this field decaying to E plus E minus, giving you that. But it's also the case into gamma gamma, and that's you can have a prediction, say, because then this line has to be there, a line which is given by the half of the mass of this field. And we computed for a generic case, it is suppressed with respect to this, because there is a long, big factor between the two couplings. But this is a straight decay, and this one requires a lot of phase space and then complicated structure. So at the end, the two things compete. So in principle, this should be in the observable range not far in the future. I have to say that the shape of this line is lopsided, so it's not clear how much percentage is coming from from this moduli field. This is just to mention, this is the work by Boyarsky et al., where they have been studying several lines, and they have found several lines beyond the 511 kV with 3 to 4 sigma that could, all of them can be part of dark, dark matter, although it's not, this evidence is not that strong yet. Okay, so let me tell you the general picture. The general picture is that you have a number of small, heavy Keeler moduli, the blowing up modes. They're cosmologically harmless. The volume modulus is subject to the cosmological moduli problem, so that's bad. But it could be a source of the 511 kV if this solving problem is addressed. And you have a prediction of this monochromatic line. But then there are also these other guys, the ones that were unfixed after the alpha prime corrections. They're even lighter than this, so they can still decay into gamma-gamma, not to the plus and minus. They don't have enough mass for that. And they can give you other the monochromatic lines. So it will be kind of fantastic if we could see all these monochromatic lines in the sky to see the shape of the Calabi-Yau. Unfortunately, the couplings here are too weak, so it will take a long time. And I insist that the cosmological model problem has to be addressed. So let me finish with the God string scale scenario. So, yes? No problem. Mm-hmm. Two transparencies. So, as I told you, the intermediate scale scenario was interesting to get to address the issue of the hierarchy problem, but it doesn't have to be, especially because of this tension between cosmology and low energy supersymmetry. If you don't have low energy supersymmetry, you solve many of these problems. The scale of inflation is good, there's no cosmological moduli problem because the moduli are heavy, and so on. So, and of course, in our case, you can get a CC, the God scale, as the intermediate scale, both. So it's interesting to consider this, take this seriously. And so then you have a God scale, which people like. The inflation scale works okay. You don't have to do the game of having this long potential with a inflation and then a long running. Then the standard model scale, you can get it by making W0 small, so you have to allow some tuning here, or by warping. Warping is also available in this quantification, so you can have a God scale given by the volume, and then the TV scale given by some warping where you put the standard model. And here, the only thing I would like to add is that there's a candidate for quintessence. The volume axiom, the partner of the volume, is an axiom that has a potential e to the minus volume to the 2/3 times cosine. So that could be a candidate for quintessence in that gives you a W different from minus one. Of course, there are many nines here. Okay. So, and then, of course, that will give you a phenology. If you have this warping, then you have no low energy supersymmetry, so it will be an alternative to the other scenario, and that will be interesting to test in the LHC. So you can differentiate it in different scenarios experimentally. So that's essentially in the spirit that Eva was mentioning at the end of her talk, that string theory provides you several scenarios, and you can compare them and rule them out one by one, but not, even though you cannot rule out the theory by itself. So that's progress. Okay, conclusions, here they are. The number two relative effects fix only a fraction of the Keeler moduli, the n small. The alpha prime corrections fix the volume to exponentially large volume sizes, and that's very generic in models. Notice that both large volume and large warping are present in the same class of models, so you have a lot of room to get hierarchies, which is good for low energy physics. We need loop corrections to fix the rest of the Keeler moduli. We say that there are now approximate abelian and non-abelian symmetries, global symmetries that can play a role. Well, there's interesting phenomenology and cosmology. There's this issue about the God scale versus intermediate scale, and it's something that provides different scenarios that can be compared and tested. The new large field inflation scenario that with R in the 0.01 or so, interesting astrophysics for the monochromatic lines, and then open questions like cosmological moduli problem, reheating. And of course, we have not to forget that a fully realistic model, even though I'm just talking about model stabilization, assuming that there is a standard model fixing on living on the small cycle, that's not explicitly done. So that's something I said, one of the open questions we have in our field. Okay, thank you.
Any questions?
Uh,
One of the potentials you showed was negative, and I don't recall you mentioning the problem of uplifting. Is that an issue?
Good question. Yes, I didn't mention it because I didn't have anything new to add. Essentially, I use the same idea of KKLT and so on.
But don't you also have the possibility to use this alpha prime correction for uplifting by itself as Balasubramanian?
Yes, it works, but then it moves your volume to small sizes, and then you start not trusting your effective field theory. That's a possibility, but then, yes, you don't trust it.
Other questions?
Yeah, you said you need the loop correction, the one-up correction, to stabilize all these further small moduli. One of them makes this inflaton direction. What about higher loop corrections, which generically should be there, right? Two loop, three loop.
Yes. That's a good point. You will need them only if there will be directions which are flat after the one-loop correction. So you go step by step. So otherwise, they're just small corrections to what you have.
But what I wanted also to know, in which sense do they change the shape of this inflaton potential?
Very good question. For the small field inflation, yes, of course, that's what the one loop correction will change that. For the large field, we have to study it in more detail. But the correction will be suppressed by one over the volume or one over the size of the field, and the field is large, so then we expect. And that in this case, the you get inflation not because the potential is very flat, it's because the field is large. So in that sense, it's much less sensitive to loop correction. So in that sense, this large field inflation case looks more robust than the small field inflation case. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we can continue with the next lecture.